Hello, welcome to the Ned's Club Washington DC Art Collection Tour. My name is Kate Bryan and I'm going to be your guide. I'm an art historian, broadcaster and curator, and I have the great privilege of curating all of the art for the Ned's Club Washington DC. I also curated the Ned Nomad, which opened in New York in 2022, and the Ned London, which opened in 2017. And across all of these sites, my aspiration really is making art an integral part of the experience, something that might inspire you, challenges people, and connects us on a deeper level, and really supports the local art community. At Ned's Club Washington DC, our newest location, we focused on both championing local talent in one collection, which you'll find displayed on the rooftop on the ninth floor, as well as a collection which is a pointed look at gender imbalance. It's called The First 47, and then so far in American history, there have been 47 male presidents and zero women. So this collection inverts those numbers, and we present the work of 47 women and zero men. The First 47 features some of the most established names working in the US today. Names such as Judy Chicago, Jenny Holzer, Ellen Gallagher, Catherine Opie, Marilyn Minter. The work of these 47 women artists can be found in almost every major US museum. They're in numerous permanent collections and they're really shaping what art is today. And it's an extraordinary honor to be able to host all of them at one site on permanent display. We're going to start our tour in the lobby of this Art Deco-inspired building. And in the lobby, we've got this green wall label, which introduces you to both collections and gives you an alphabetical list of everybody on display. This is also the place that you can follow the QR code to find both this audio content and an art map for the entire site. So, the lobby. This is where the First 47 collection begins. And you'll notice that each one of the First 47 artworks feature a silver nameplate. The first work to greet members is a piece by Patricia Cronin. She's a New York-based artist, and this work is called The Sleeping Fawn. And this is part of Cronin's ongoing investigation into classical imagery, but reimagined from a feminist perspective. And you'll see actually that this work is really just a warm-up for an impressive, large-scale, site-specific work that she's made in the parlor upstairs, which we'll get to soon. But first, next to the elevators are two oil paintings by one of the younger artists in the First 47 collection. Her name is Bee Chehab. These paintings have got great titles, Mexican Dinner Hero and Champions. Chehab is an artist who we commissioned to make a large-scale mural in the Ned Nomad in New York, which quickly became a firm favourite with members, and the artist's career has really gone from strength to strength. Chehab makes paintings which play with the boundaries of abstraction, and she often describes them as painting failed memories. And I think these two paintings are a great example of the luscious texture that she's able to achieve with these great gestural marks, unusual colour combinations. And listen, if you look really carefully, you can see some symbols that are drawn from a kind of esoteric lexicon that she's been making. Things such as cowboy boots, stars, snakes, ladders and furniture. We're going to go up to the 10th floor, and that's where the remainder of the First 47 collection is, across the entire floor. Coming out of the elevator, we're greeted by three figurative artworks, which all investigate how identity is constructed. Firstly, we can see a photograph by Xaviera Simmons, which is part of a large series which sees her select 100 images from her album cover collection. And her album cover collection is actually 4,000 records. So she picks 100 of these records and then poses before an idyllic landscape, holding the album cover in front of her face. And by doing so, she conceals her own identity, but then takes on the kind of cultural connotations of the album cover. Alongside it is a painting by Elizabeth Paynton, the small green painting. And Paynton is well known for her intimate, small-scale portraits of celebrities, friends, and historical figures. Her work is always characterized by these washes of pigment and jewel tones, and her work really addresses notions of idolatry and obsession. Nearby is another work that makes us question who we idolize and why, and that's by Marilyn Minter. And Minter's large photographic work, which really is a star piece in the collection, investigates beauty, perfection, and illusion. And you can see here that she borrows language taken from high fashion magazine editorials and depicts this cropped face in these very saturated colours. She's kind of both at once reveling in idealized glamour, but also showing us the paradox of this kind of image making. It's been highly photoshopped, and it's a distortion of reality. And she's making us think about whether artifice is ugly. In the East Corridor, I really want to focus on Samantha Roth just for a moment, as I love this painting so much. Her language is really distinctive. She always works in highly detailed diaphanous layers of carefully applied coloured pencil over a dark painted background. So what that means is that these pictures actually look quite X-ray-like. They're always white on a very dark surface. This work belongs to an ongoing series of figures with cactus and succulent cuttings taped to the body. Seems a very strange language, but it's a semi-autobiographical nod to both vegetation traffickers and the artist's own habit of obsessively collecting plant clippings on her neighbourhood walks for later propagation. The figure here you can see is holding a playing card, as if she's about to perform a magic trick. And this is a reference to the artist's investigation of the power of misdirection. We can also notice here that the cactus smuggler, and that's the name of the picture, has unbuttoned pants, which show early signs of pregnancy. So it's a very enigmatic painting. Moving into the library, you'll find 23 of the 47 artists that make up the first 47, and they're displayed in a rhythmic display across the shelving. It was really my hope here that every time you visited the library, you would notice a different artwork, and perhaps in a new way. So there's this feeling that the collection is constantly revealing new things to you. The largest of the works in the library is the tapestry, which conceals a TV screen, actually. And it was custom-made by Malaika Temba, who uses digital weaving techniques that employ layered and collaged imagery and symbols from contemporary media and found images. So there's this lovely dialogue between tapestry being this kind of historic, textile, craft-based work and something which is actually digitally rendered. And she takes these textile works and puts the diasporic aunties and femmes in the spotlight. So they always feature women who are important to her. When facing the tapestry to the right-hand side, you'll see a black and white text-based work, which is an icon of 20th century art history by none other than the Guerrilla Girls. Since 1985, the Guerrilla Girls have been an anonymous group of artist activists. They've used their anonymity to hold the art world to account over representation for women artists and also the absence of artists of colour. This witty poster was first plastered on the streets of New York in a guerrilla fashion in the late 1980s, and it is still painfully pertinent today when women still do not have parity with men in their art careers. It was a really important work for us to be able to include, given the theme of the collection, and also we're really proud to be able to acquire it directly from the two founder members of the Guerrilla Girls, who go by the names of dead women artists and have signed it with those names, so you'll see that it's signed Frida Kahlo and Cutter Colvitz. If you look to the other side of the tapestry and go all the way to the window, you'll find a collage by Deborah Roberts, which depicts a young girl. Roberts' work has been internationally recognised in the past decade for carefully reflecting the challenges encountered by young black children as they strive to build their identity, particularly as they respond to preconceived social constructs. Opposite the Deborah Roberts work, under the picture light, is a gloriously luscious painting by Tala Madani, which always leaves me slightly unsettled as to whether I'm looking at something that exists in the natural world or rather as a kind of surreal, deadpan version drawn from the artist's mind. The next alcove has two works under picture lights facing each other, one by Alana Fields, which is the larger of the two, and the other by Cherie Hovsbian, both of whom push the boundaries of photography as a medium. Fields has covered the surface of her portrait in resin, whereas Hovsbian makes her work rather sculptural in presentation with the inclusion of string and walnut wood. It's an exquisite little object. Moving along to the next pair under the picture lights, you find Jenny Holzer and Colleen Smith on the back bar wall. The Jenny Holzer is one of the most important works in the first 47 collection. For decades, she used text to raise important issues about abuse of power and has never shied away from sensitive material. This work is part of an ongoing series where the artist has mined declassified US government documents to create redaction paintings. And you can see here that she's done it with fingerprint marks. Opposite, the work is by Colleen Smith, who is an experimental artist who works across many media, but actually is especially known for her feature film Dry Longs Go. Next to Colleen Smith is a work on paper by Christine Sun Kim. Deaf from birth, Kim deals with sound as a medium that can be physically expressive, communicative, and experienced viscerally. As is typical of Kim's work, in this piece you can see she uses humour as a strategy and presents musical notation and written language to communicate big ideas about things that we might take for granted. Across the other side of the bar, on the left-hand wall, is a triptych by Wendy Redstar, who is an enrolled member of the Apsa Lugard tribe, also known as the Crow tribe. Drawing on pop culture, conceptual art strategies, and the Crow traditions within which she was raised, Redstar pushes the conversation surrounding Native American perspectives in new directions. In this triptych on paper, Redstar repurposes found imagery, creating a witty and subversive message that exposes audiences to materials that are typically only available to researchers. Leaving the library and heading down the East Corridor, you'll find two portraits by acclaimed artist Catherine Opie, who is at the forefront of visual investigations into belonging and community in America. In these striking photographs, Opie has borrowed from historical modes of image making. In one of the images, she presents Jane Fonda, an American actor and activist, shown in the guise of a swagger portrait for a new century, where a barefoot octogenarian holds the camera's eyes while lounging. The paired image depicts the artist Bet Yasar, who was part of the Black Arts Movement in the 1970s, which engaged myths and stereotypes around race and femininity. The portrait deploys minimalism and Baroque devices simultaneously to highlight the venerable artist who's still working today, sat alert and bright-eyed in the chair. Entering the drawing room, you'll see two textile works on the right-hand side, one by Bezar Arundini, which draws on her Kurdistan heritage, and another by Adrian Elise Tarver, who also created two small works on paper in the library, and who works with imagery derived from tarot, tourism, and historic materials, and in this case presents a beautiful tapestry. In the room adjacent is the parlour room, and that's where we'll find one of the key commissions of the First 47 collection, a site-specific installation by Patricia Cronin, which we signposted earlier in the building's lobby. Called The First Democracy, it takes the form of a wraparound watercolour-like wallpaper featuring classical imagery of women and points to the first democracy in Greece. As the artist herself describes, "The First Democracy revisits and reinvents ideas about the human, the heroic, and the divine. At a time when women are being pushed from public life and democracies are increasingly vulnerable, I researched one of the earliest democracies and focused on bringing this authoritative, ancient female deity back to our discourse, allowing for a reevaluation and subversion of historical approaches to statuary." Cronin also contextualizes the piece by asserting that, "I think the main question throughout all of my work, my whole career, has been whose life has value and whose body has value and who decides." Moving back into the drawing room, above the fireplace, you'll see the largest painting in the First 47, which is by Heidi Hahn, an artist who usually paints the female form. In this sumptuous, paraffin-infused painting, Hahn has almost completely abstracted the figure into space, form, and colour, creating a very ambiguous work that conceals more than it displays. In the corridor are three circular works known as tondos, including one of the most visually striking works in the collection by Genevieve Gagnard. Gagnard repurposes found imagery from the 19th and 20th centuries, including vintage wallpaper, antique furniture, found figurines and decor, and she especially selects those things which have perpetuated racist stereotypes as a way to challenge and redefine their symbolic meaning. The Founders' Dining Room presents four key works, including one of the most significant pieces in the collection, which has historical importance, by Judy Chicago. Chicago was named as one of Time magazine's 100 most influential people in 2018, and for six decades she's been at the forefront of feminist art and education. This piece is from her pyrotechnic series, which she began in the late 1960s, titled Atmospheres, which were intended to transform and soften the landscape, introducing a feminine impulse into the environment. This particular work features the Santa Barbara Museum and is a pyrotechnic piece that she made in 1969. Now we're going to relocate to the rooftop, where we'll move on to some of the highlights of the local artist collection, which numbers 23 artists who were born, based or trained in Washington, D.C. This is one of the only places in the city to see such a focused presentation of local talent on permanent display. Easily one of the most ambitious features of the local art collection is the ceiling mural by Rose Jaffe. Wrapping around the ceiling alcove like a Greek frieze, Jaffe spent 2 weeks finishing this work on site before we opened. Entitled What Women Carry, Jaffe pulls in themes of the physical and emotional burdens of women. Women as vessels, women who bend, women who break, who root into the ground and harmoniously blossom through it all. Following the commission, Jaffe also created three unique works on paper inspired by the installation, which we've also hung in the same room. Next to the cocktail bar is a nook with two sumptuous photographic landscapes by Eve White. This body of work, of which there are two further examples downstairs in the Walker Salon, emerges from using plexiglass sculptures as surrogates for her own body and perspective, allowing the shape to refract light and reflect an abstracted version of her surroundings. Moving beyond this pair, we arrive at Kaya Restaurant, where there are six paintings made for the space by Zhivago Duncan. These works question the Anthropocene, positing instead that we are not nature's antagonists, but rather humans are part and parcel of a singular phenomenon of consciousness. So Duncan's making us wonder about a vast, interconnected species. The South Corridor features a large-scale work by local artist Lindy Muller, who is also selected for inclusion in the first 47, as well as pieces by Rush Baker IV, which may appear fully abstract at first glance, but in fact these pieces warrant further looking, as they all feature an underlying image layered over with plaster, staining, sanding, and then repainting. Moving downstairs to floor 9, which is our floor hosting all of our event spaces, we emerge out of the elevator to a series of surrealist-inspired works, perhaps most strongly demonstrated in Aaron Maya Carateo's nocturnal painting. The York Room features a wonderful abstract painting by Maggie Michaels, who recently completed a residency at the prestigious Joan Mitchell Foundation. Both the York Room and the adjacent Sawyer Room display paintings by Victor Epuk, which are part of his reimagining of the ancient Nigerian communication system, Sibidi. The last work I want to highlight is another of the site-specific commissions, this time by Eric Uller. In the Lincoln Foyer, the artist presents a 20-foot triptych. In his own words, "This new cycle of paintings draws from the tradition of history painting to explore a creation myth, moving from a mystical, primordial beginning through a series of earthly scenes. The narrative unfolds with the seeding of oceans, the rise of humanity, and the domestication of animals, culminating in a final Dutch still life-inspired panel. Here, a seemingly mundane scene, a cat waiting for scraps beside a goose, becomes a subtle commentary on the contemporary age of consumption. This quiet moment invites reflection on our complex relationship with the world and the ambiguous role we play within it." Thank you so much for joining me as we picked out some of the highlights of the many treasures of the Ned's Club DC Art Collection, which totals 133 artworks across the two thematic collections. Everything is here on permanent display, and please do find out more about every piece using the QR code and the art map. We're incredibly grateful to all of the artists and gallerists who have helped us bring together this special collection. I believe that all of the artists we have selected for display do an incredible job at connecting us through language, time, and space. Thank you for being with us.